I think the IRS was right back in 92 from a theoretical standpoint. And let me go into why. Let's assume my good friend Stanley Blend, who's sitting in the back, decides to build a property by himself. He goes out and buys a piece of land, spends a lot of his own time putting together that property, and then he turns around and sells it after more than a year after it's completed. Does anyone question that he has all capital gain? No, it's absolutely crystal clear. He has all capital gain. Yet, he's being compensated through the sale for his personal labors. No one attempts to impute a fee. No one attempts to impute ordinary income in part. It's all capital gain. Now, what if instead Stanley joins with one of his sons, and his son spends the time doing the work, but the son, although maybe not in Stanley's case, the son doesn't have as much money, so Stanley puts up the money. But the son does the work. And they have formed a partnership to do this. But they agreed to split the income, a very common service partner, capital partner arrangement. In that situation, what is Stanley's share of the income when the property is sold? Well, you could argue that what Stanley has is a profits interest. I assure you, if you told members of Congress that you had a father-son situation where you had an investment in real estate and the son was putting in the work and you're going to tax the father as ordinary income for putting up the money, they would be shocked to hear that that's what any profits interest legislation would result in. Now, change the facts. Stanley has money, but he goes out and brings in Larry Campagna, who will be speaking later today, and has Larry do the work, not a familial situation. Now you're getting into much more hardcore profits interest situation, because we'll be in a situation where Larry is performing the services, and they are services for the partnership, and he could be paid a fee, but then he wouldn't get all the upside. He could have just gotten a service fee. Or you could have other ways to get there, but you now have a clear profits interest in a non-familial situation. Yet many people would say that should still be capital gains, because if Larry had done the work with his own money, we're back to scenario one. Change the facts one more time. Mike Cook sitting there doesn't like real estate. Mike likes to invest in stocks. Mike goes out and spends all of his time poring over the markets, picking stocks, and he does so quite well and he makes a profit. And he holds the stocks for long-term capital gain. Does anyone question that he has long-term capital gain? No, of course he does. But he's being rewarded not only for his investment, but also for his activity. And the code has never attempted to distinguish between the two. But if Mike goes out and brings in a fund manager to manage his portfolio, and instead of rewarding the fund manager with a fee, he gives him a share of the profits on purely a profits interest basis, on an upside basis, again, everyone will say that that's a profits interest. You could theoretically, from a tax perspective, and by the way, it's fascinating to understand that when I was in law school, we're now talking decades and decades ago, my then tax professor, Wally Blum, at the University of Chicago, who's quite well known, raised this exact question. Why in these scenarios does the law not impute fee income, ordinary income in part, based on some base assumption of hourly rate to either Mike Cook or Stanley Blend when they're doing their own work for themselves? And the real reasons are a combination of both administration and equity. We don't know what the right amount of fee is, and we certainly don't know, as an administrative matter, how to do it. And then you have the possibility, of course, what if Mike Cook spends all of his time investing in stocks, and it turns out he's a lousy investor? And instead of having a capital gain, he has a loss. Well, clearly, they don't want to let him have an ordinary loss. He's going to get a capital loss, which he can't utilize much. change the facts, and it's my good friend, Mr. Blend, and he builds real estate, and he stinks too much money in it, and he has a loss. Would you want to give him ordinary income and a loss on sale? Again, you have both issues of equity and administration. So the way the law developed was to really apply subchapter K appropriately. Treat the partnership as the owner of its assets, as the entity under 702 for computation of the income, and then allocate the income to the partners under 704. And assuming you don't have the forbidden class of prior services, the fact that a partner received their interest with respect to future services and share in future profits, well, they get flow through of the character of whatever those profits were. And if those profits were capital gain, then the partners get long-term capital gain. If those profits were ordinary income, then the partners get their share of ordinary income. And it's a profits interest, and the law works perfectly well. So, if the law works well, why is it called the carried interest loophole?